always been an issue that inflames passions.
We're going to hopefully get a lot of people coming in, and they're all going to come in legally.
Hello, and welcome to All Roads Lead Here, a project documenting immigration stories, immigration activism, immigration resources, and immigration law. I'm your host, Daniel Roque, and I'm here joined by my guest, Dayanira.
Hey, how are y'all?
I'm good, Daya. How are you?
I'm good. Doing all right.
Thank you very much for coming on my show.
No problem. I'm happy to be here. This is really exciting.
I think what you guys are doing at Make the Road New Jersey is really good. I think highlighting different resources and the activism work that goes in to immigration here in New Jersey is really, really important, especially since you don't really hear that much about immigration things or activism, at least, going on in New Jersey. You hear a lot of it going on in New York, especially the city, but not really New Jersey.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, a lot of people often forget about New Jersey. You know what they say, we're like the armpit of the U.S. Yeah. So people relatively forget about New Jersey. And also because we're in a really privileged position, right, to be primarily Democratic and not to be like the Texas of the world, right, or the like the Alabamas of the world, where you hear a lot more things like that are anti-immigrant. Yeah. So in a way, we're fortunate and easily forgotten. Yeah.
And it's amazing that we're so forgotten because New Jersey is one of the most diverse states in the country. And we have a lot of immigration-related issues here, too. I know when I used to be involved heavily in immigration activism, part of my initiatives were to try and close down the ICE detention facility here in Hudson County. Yeah. It's a really big deal. Nobody talks about it, you know?
Yeah, we're still chugging along with that fight. Yeah, there's a lot of things that can be done here. And, you know, in the same vein of being often forgotten, people don't often share the stories of the community here in New Jersey. So really excited to just be able to talk about our stories and the stories of, like, being an immigrant and what it's like to be from New Jersey and to call New Jersey home.
Okay, so let's get started with the first set of questions. How old are you and where are you from?
Yeah, so I am 25. I was born in Mexico, in Veracruz, so the southern eastern part of Mexico.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And what was life like for you back home?
I mean, I don't remember that much, you know, to be honest. I do remember a lot of guessing who my father was. My dad migrated to the U.S. when I was only 6 months old. So I had no actual memories of who he looked like until I was 4 years old and came to this country. And I remember like just looking at, you know, airport scenes and being like, is that my dad? And my aunt's like, that looks nothing like you. Like, why would you think that's your dad? Right. But I had no idea what he looked like. And when we actually came to the States and we came to New Jersey, I remember telling my sister, hey, when's your dad leaving? And then she's like, what are you talking about? And then I was like, yeah, like, when's your dad leaving? And she's like, that's your dad. And I was like, oh, that's my dad. And that's how I put two and two together that, like, the man that had, like, picked us up from the airport and we were living with was also my father. So I remember a lot of that. You know, I don't have a lot of memories with my mom. She also came here when I was two. So a lot of my childhood in Mexico was living with my aunt, who is my second mom, you know, and I remember she was crying when we left, and these are all obviously like really vague memories. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I'm going to come back, you know, and it's been 21 years and we haven't been back. So I think she really knew what it meant for us when she was saying goodbye that time, a lot more than I did at 4 years old.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the immigrants I speak to, a lot of the people, they all say the same thing, you know, I feel like the parents, especially when people move when they're really young, the parents really take on the brunt of that burden. What made your parents want to come over here?
You know, in 1994, there was like a lot of economic crisis in Mexico. My mom and my dad just really wanted a better life for us. You know, I had just been born. I'm the youngest of three. And they just really needed to figure out a way to make sure that we were successful. So my dad decided to come, see what it was like. And then my mom came and, you know, they were actively money to support us. But unfortunately, my sister had a medical emergency and my mom was unable to be here. So she just made the decision that she could no longer be without her children. She told me stories that she would like go by McDonald's and wonder whether we ate or it would be cold here. And she'd wonder if we had a sweater on, even though like it's super hot in Mexico. And of course, we didn't have a sweater on. Right. So small things that like she worried about. So then in 1999, she she moved mountains and she pressured my dad, and we came to reunify with them here.
Do you remember anything about the process at all? And can you compare like what you went through to like maybe some of the stories immigrants go through now?
Yeah, I mean, we're super fortunate, right? We came here on visas. You know, like I only know that like we landed because there's pictures, right? And we came with my grandma and my aunt, and it was fairly easy, right? Like we hopped on a plane, there was no worries. Like as if like I was traveling to California from New Jersey, right? It's very similar experience. But you know, the stories of my mom, like when she had to cross the border, or my father when they had to cross the border, right? Or, you know, recently, like I had the privilege of like one of our neighbors, her daughter migrated all the way from like Honduras, right, on foot. And I remember like we went, and as soon as she got here, we took her to Marshall's, right? And we bought her clothes and we bought her shoes. And one of the things that I remember is that she had gone up more than like a size and a half in shoe size because her feet were incredibly swollen from that journey that she took.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I was really fortunate to be able to come here in what's like the easier way, right? I didn't have to like cross an entire country to come here on foot. So yeah, I consider myself really privileged to have had it so easy. Yeah.
I'm going to touch more on that later, especially when we get into the make the like your activism work. But for sure. What was your first memory of being here in the U.S.? And do you think that like shaped you in any way?
I mean, I remember a lot of my memories are associated with pictures that my mom keep. But the first like actual memory or like actual, I guess, memory of my own, right? Like, unfortunately, our apartment burned down when I was in the first grade. And like I remember that so vividly, right? Like I remember like having to rush out in the middle of the night without shoes, and like just like the hustle and bustle of what that meant. That was, I think, like my first real memory. Also, a lot of that comes with like there was educators who like threw down so heavy for my family, right? Like there was clothes for my family. They made sure my family had shelter. So I remember a lot of that. And, you know, obviously, like from the pictures, I know I met my cousins on the first day who were probably like, who are these people? And like, you know, the language barrier. And I remember that a lot of like that meeting my cousins and wanting to be friends with them really pushed me to like watch English cartoons, want to learn English, right? Of course, want to learn all the curse words and be cool like them, right? Really like they were my best friends growing up. Like they were like, you know, I had siblings, but they were closer to my age, my cousins. And like, it would always be a fight because I'd want to go hang out with them all the time, every day. Yeah.
Like, I actually want to touch on your experience after like you settled down here. I know being an immigrant, especially in a country, or being an immigrant anywhere, but especially here in the US, I feel like is very, very difficult. Maybe, yeah. I don't know what it was like back then, but now it seems like it's a very hostile environment. Do you, can you touch on that or share any experiences you have that might show that? Like, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we always knew we were undocumented, right? Like it wasn't a secret. There's a lot of stories of folks who like didn't know until they were trying to get a permit or going to college, right? And like, we always knew that we were undocumented. And I remember having conversations with my father, who had the ability to adjust way before we did. About when like we would adjust, right? And like if we would ever adjust. And like I had all these dreams of being a doctor or like, you know, going to law school. And I was like, I can't do all those things if we don't adjust. And these are conversations that I had with him when I was like in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. So our reality was always, always there. We always knew not to open the door, right? And we also like, my parents worked a ton, right? Like my mom came home and then she'd cook and then she'd go to a part-time job. My dad would get home 6-7 depending on what time he finishes landscaping. And a lot of our childhood was like my sister taking care of me, who's 5 years older, or my brother, right? And like worrying about like, is child services gonna knock on our door because our parents are always MIA, right? Like, or like is ICE coming to our door? So never opening the door. You know, we always sort of knew who was coming, so if someone randomly knocked, we're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And a lot of like the realities, right? And again, I'm super fortunate. I'm the youngest of three. I came here when I was 4. My brother was 14 and my sister was 9. So the experience for my brother was totally different, right? And my sister as well. Like my sister started working overnight shift when she was 14 years old, right? Like my brother didn't go to university, didn't go to post high school education. And he worked a factory job, same overnight, because it was the reality of our family, right? So I was really fortunate. I think I felt it the most when I was in high school, because I felt like I was so different than my peers. And everybody was like, where are you going to college? And I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing with my life. Like, So.
I mean, I feel that fear is something that's really scary. Do you mind asking, when did you become documented, or when did your family become documented?
We're, all my siblings are DACA eligible.
Yeah.
So we're, I mean, technically I have DACA, which is a form of protection, but I am not, quote unquote, legal yet. None of my family except my father is, my father's currently a resident.
Okay.
And none of us, like, unfortunately, were able to adjust before we turned of age, which is 21. Once you're 21, the process is a lot harder.
Yeah.
And you're technically a minor.
That's a little insane how you could, like, your family could be here for so long, and still the immigration process in this country is so terrible that you guys are still not considered, you know, citizens or long-term residents or,
The backlog is ridiculous, right? Like, especially from Mexico, it's over 20 years. So they're processing cases for people that were like applied 20 years ago, you know? And obviously when you first come to the country, you don't understand the immigration process. You don't know what to do right off the bat, right? Like, sometimes you miss your opportunity because you decided to adjust a year after you got here, or several years, and you end up waiting forever, right, to actually be able to adjust. And unfortunately, the ways of adjusting are only very incredibly limited, right? Like, I always tell people, is you're either related to someone, unfortunately you were a victim of a crime, are basically the main two avenues of adjusting. Oh, and if you're rich, right, which seldomly immigrants coming through the border are not the ones who have $1 million to invest.
Yeah. What, can you touch more on that crime? Because I didn't know about that. So if you're a victim of a crime, you can...
So there's different types of visas, right? You know, you could always be petitioned by your... And again, I'm going to be very clear that I'm not a lawyer, so this is not legal advice. Yeah. But since you're organizing forever, right, you pick up all this stuff. But if you're related to someone, you can adjust. But also, if you've been a victim of a crime, there's also other potential, like, visas, right? Like, there's visa opportunities for folks who are, like... human trafficking victims, right, or folks who are part of in domestic violence relationships, or if folks were like a victim of a hate crime, right? And those are very like I hope people don't have to go through those situations in their lives, but for a lot of undocumented immigrants, going through those situations are the only ways that they're actually able to adjust status. So it's very, very, very limiting, right? Like, it almost, like, doesn't give chance for you to adjust if you're having a normal positive life.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Sounds like it. So I want to touch more on how your background influenced your activism and what made you want to get into activism.
Yeah, for sure. So I've actually been organizing for almost 10 years now. So I started back in high school. I started primarily because I wanted to be I wanted to go to university, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was a total nerd, still am. Like, I would read for fun. I was in every club, and it became really difficult for me, and it became like a really hard moment in my life to know that, like, I wasn't going to be able to go to university like everyone else. I had all these dreams and all these aspirations, and it was very limiting for me. It almost at the time felt impossible. So we started organizing in our high school because we just wanted better access to resources, right? Our counselors, as much as they were amazing human beings, didn't have the knowledge.
Yeah.
To be able to support us in the way that we needed to be. So we took it upon ourselves to, like, look for scholarships, right? And we went to the counselor's office and said, hey, we found this stack of scholarships for undocumented students. Can you throw this in your scholarship binder, right? And, like, very proactive for ourselves. So that's how I started organizing back forever ago. And then obviously in college it shifted because we started doing a lot more of what we call deportation defense, which is just like fighting to stop deportations. And during the Obama administration, that was a lot easier than it is now, right? Like,
A lot of
public pressure could stop a deportation.
And what does that involve? Like, how do you stop a deportation?
I mean, back in the day, right, like, all it would take was, like, public pressure, right? Like, you would make calls, like, you would sign petitions, you would show up in Newark at the ICE field office and do a protest, right?
Oh, and then stop
interviews. Yeah, like, you would basically shame the administration for deporting this one individual, right? Now we know that under the new administration, this agency has no shame, right? Yeah. So it's very hard to do that. But before, it was easier. I don't want to say like it was always possible, but it was a lot easier to fight. And during one semester of college, we were actually able to support people in ending 5 deportations.
Oh, wow.
And we were actually able to bring a father and a husband back home from Louisiana after he was already transferred. So those were like really successful parts of our organizing and really important for us to like be able to unite. And when I say us, it was a group of like 5 girls who said, we want to do this. We're undocumented and we're ready to do something about it. So yeah, it was a pretty, but then obviously life and just being a college student and having to decide whether you actually want to get good grades and keep your scholarship or continue to fight these deportation cases. It just became really tough for us to juggle it all.
And how does before I say that, you're not the first person to tell me that things were much easier before. I spoke to an immigration lawyer in an earlier episode, and they worked with trying to get benefits for immigrants. There's certain like benefits that immigrants can apply for. He said it was much easier before than it is now. Now it seems like every aspect of immigration, the agencies that deal with immigration, they don't care.
Yeah.
They're just trying to deny people benefits, deny people, I guess, access to like a better life in some senses. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, under this new administration, right, he is piece by piece building what we call the deportation machine, right? And if you think about immigration and deportation as a factory of sorts, right, like the Obama administration really left the building. Like I want to be clear that during the Obama administration, it was the highest number of people that had ever been deported under any administration, right? And that's real. Like, we got DACA, but we also got a ton of deportations and we got a ton of fear. But Obama basically left this abandoned building. And Trump was like, these are the perfect walls to build my machine and my infrastructure, right? And piece by piece, he has been adding and adding and adding. And we see this in the form of executive orders, right? We saw him trying to do the Muslim ban. Yeah. We saw him like leave. I mean, not only him, but all of these Republican representatives leave immigrants out of COVID relief, right? Like piece by piece, they're adding this machine. It was like, hey, if you were a victim of a crime, like if you committed a crime, we're going to pick you up. Now it's like, we're picking everybody up. It doesn't matter where. Right. And I remember in January after he had won, when they did the massive raids in New York and New Jersey, like the fear that it was in our communities. It's just, he's got the machine going, and it's really, it's been really hard for us to put a stop to like the building of this deportation machine.
I must say that the fear is 100% real. I remember specifically talking to immigrants, seeing how many people would show up now versus before to like know your rights classes that I used to be a part of. A lot of people show up. I'm very happy in some senses that the area I live in, Hudson County, they're more willing to protect immigrants because the majority of people in political power are immigrants themselves. That's still, sadly, that's not enough for them to like completely shut out this administration because partially they don't want to. But that's a story for another day. I want to talk. It's tough. But I want to get into Make the Road New Jersey. What's the history of it, and what's your role in it?
Yeah, for sure. So Make the Road New Jersey is part of a larger family of organizations under Make the Road States. These organizations can be found in New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Nevada, and New Jersey. We've been around for what's going to be now almost 6 years. And really, it came out of the idea of Make the Road New York, right? Make the Road New York has been around for more than 20 years. It's in every single one of the boroughs in New York City. And we saw that because a lot of our community could no longer afford to live in New York, they were coming to areas like Elizabeth. You know, you cross the bridge from New York, you're in Elizabeth. And we made the decision to go and to continue to support our community members, even if it meant building infrastructure in a completely different state. So for the past 6 years, we've been building infrastructure, and actually, you know, the way that Make the Road New Jersey works and all the Make the Roads is they are membership based. So once you become a member, you have voice and you have a vote, and you're able to vote on what we're going to do that year. Right. And if our members don't vote on it, we don't take on that work. Right. And for 5 years, our members have voted on driver's license expansion, right? Every year they were like, this is what we live by. This is what we're going to do. And that's really how it started, with like the desire to win driver's license. Like New York and New Jersey are completely different, right? Like in New York, you get the MTA and you go wherever you need to go, right? You take a bus, right? In New Jersey, and there's places in New Jersey where the bus never comes, right? Or they cannot easily access a train because there's no train stations in every city. So it was a really, really big push for us. And I'm an organizer there. I've only been there for about a year now. But before this, I was organizing at United We Dream for about 3.5 years, and decided to come here just because, to be honest, I missed home. I missed being with my family, and I felt really disconnected with the work if I wasn't actively fighting for my family and for my community. So about a year ago, we started building in Perth Amboy, which is where I, you know, when somebody tells you what's your favorite food from your hometown, like I think of all the little Latin spots in Perth Amboy, right? I never think about the places in Veracruz, even though like I was born there. So yeah, we decided that we're going to build community in Perth Amboy, and we're going to open up our third office. Unfortunately, we had COVID, so it didn't happen, but we will, once this is all over, open and off our third office in New Jersey. Yeah. And then last year we won driver's license.
Congratulations.
We cried. It was amazing. To see people who had been fighting for 5 years, to see people whose like children were born when we first started, to like their children being 5 and like jumping and celebrating with us, and they don't know what's going on, right? But they're happy because their parents are happy. It was an incredible victory for immigrant communities here.
It's really amazing. I commend all of the hard work that you guys do. A lot of the times people see laws being passed by politicians or initiatives being praised by politicians, and they go, oh, those politicians are the ones that did it. But they don't see the organizers, the activists behind the scenes who are really getting the work done. And I commend you for that. I truly do. So if you could tell me, what are some of the initiatives that Make the Road New Jersey is doing like right now?
Yeah, for sure. So we actually, I joke around a lot, but like, the song, All We Do Is Win. That's really like how I feel, because very few places are we constantly winning, right? So we won driver's license last year, but this year, given a global pandemic, we were still able to win, and we just won professional licensing for undocumented young people, which means that if you go to school and you're undocumented, you can now practice, even if your career has a licensure, right? Or like a certification you need. So you could be nurses, lawyers. So we just won that, and it was just signed into law last week. So that's a huge victory. So we're obviously helping on figuring out how we support young people there. But one of our main things is we're launching what we're calling our driving school, our Escuela de Manejo, which is a driving school that prepares you not for the actual exam, but prepares you for the written part of the exam. We really thought about like we won, but what if none of our community is prepared to actually take the test? Did we really win? Did we really like implement this victory, right? So for us, it's really important that our members are able to actually go to a motor vehicle agency, not be afraid, right, and actually sit through an exam and be able to pass the exam, so that we can have more like safe drivers out in the road, right? So that we can have more like tested and licensed drivers out in the road. So we're launching that in the next 2 weeks. This Friday, we're doing the official launch on our social media. So you could look that up on our Facebook at Make the Road New Jersey. We also have a website in Spanish, which is licencianj.org, where you can find out information. We're going to post the link. So the link will be up on Friday. We are asking folks who are interested in this class to become official Make the Road New Jersey members. The information is on the is going to be on our graphic, as well as it's going to be online and all over our social media for folks who are interested in being able to apply. We are having our several different classes. So if you do not, you apply later and there's no space for the first round, you will always be able to apply for the next round.
I know a lot of people who listen to this podcast would be interested in actually volunteering.
Yes, for sure. So we are actively looking for teachers to help us teach these classes. So if you're interested in teaching and you want to know more about teaching the classes, I can go ahead and give out our main number. You call, you leave a voicemail, and someone's going to call you back. to just to like touch base with you and make sure that they connect your info. So the phone number that you can call is going to be our 908 number, which is 908-368-1196. So that's 908-368-1196. You can also send an email to licencias, which is licencias at maketheroadnj.org. If you feel more comfortable in sending an email, feel free to just also email us as well. We are taking on as many like volunteer teachers as possible. We do ask that the folks who volunteer are bilingual, because our classes will be 100% in Spanish, because that is the community that we currently serve.
I know I'm for sure going to sign up. I can't wait. I know the training is soon, right? I think Tuesday.
Yeah. So we have a training going next week. You know, we want to make sure that we don't just throw our volunteers into the abyss, and we actually train them on the material. You know, the volunteers who want to be like educators for this program, we have all the materials already. We have facilitators guide, we have presentations. So please, if you want to participate, we're really hoping to get as many people trained and ready for this exam as possible. So we'll be hosting two different classes at the same time. We'll have a Tuesday and Thursday class, and then we'll have a Saturday class for folks who to fit all of our members' work schedules.
That sounds great. That's honestly amazing. All right, Daya, I have one final question for you, and then we're going to end the interview.
Yeah, for sure.
So I ask this question to everyone, anyone who comes on, either they're sharing their story, they're activists, lawyers, whatever. If you could give one piece of advice to someone about to immigrate, or maybe someone who's new to this country, what would it be?
And for someone who's thinking of going somewhere, right? Like, this isn't the pretty picture that a lot of folks have built for us, right? There's a lot of other options. Like, you know, the United States is not the only place. And ultimately, the current situation is really difficult for immigrant people here. But I also want to be very clear that I understand the necessity to come to a different country. And if you come to Jersey, we're always going to welcome you here with open arms, right? We're here for everybody. So I would just say, do your research before you come here, right? Look up what state you want to live in. Look up if the United States is actually the right place for you. And, you know, I think that it would be really helpful. Look up nonprofit organizations that help out immigrant communities in the area that you live in, right? You might be surprised to find that there's a lot of community out there for you. And sometimes the difference is finding someone who shares the same story as you, right? Someone who's like, wow, that family looks like mine. To be able to actually get through difficult times. And that's how I started organizing, right? Somebody who looked like me said that they were undocumented and unafraid. And I remember it being the first time I heard that. And then now being so open and saying, yeah, like this is my government name, right? I'm undocumented, I'm unafraid, and I'm unashamed and unapologetic.
That's really powerful. I really love that. All right. Well, with all that being said, I want to thank you for sharing your story and the goals of Make the Road New Jersey. That's all the time we have. And to our audience, remember, we're all immigrants from somewhere. Thank you very much, Daya.
Thank you.